So I'm going to start by saying names are withheld to protect the innocent and the guilty. So it's 1994. I am living in New York. I have just completed grad school, have a few jobs under my belt. I have this awesome rent-controlled apartment on Gramercy Park. You know, like, that is like a score, right? $600 a month. Can you believe it? And I just landed a job with a U.S. Senate campaign. Now, as a woman in working in politics, there aren't that many who are working on the campaign side back then, and even fewer who are Black women working on the campaign side. I had turned down, the year before, I turned down a government job in the White House to pursue the excitement of campaigns, and this was the thing that was going to propel me to the next level. I owned, the world was my oyster, and I was just in love with life. So I packed up all my goods, gave up my rent-controlled apartment, put a year's worth of clothes in a duffel bag, and on a cold January morning with $550 in my pocket, I boarded a train to D.C. into my bright future. And my friends all waved from the train station, from the train platform. It never occurred to me to turn back, not even when my three-hour train ride to D.C. turned into a seven-hour ride into the Polar Express. It's the first time I ever heard the term nor'easter. By the time I arrived in D.C., there was 12 inches of snow on the ground, and Union Station was closed. But I was not deterred. I went to the payphone. I called my boss and said, "I am getting on the train. I will see you shortly." And she said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "I'm from the North. 12 inches? That's a regular Wednesday." So I got on the metro and then took a $40 cab ride out to Tyson's Corner. It's like $510 left in my pocket. The cab let me out in a strip mall where the campaign office was, and it was pretty desolate. All the stores were closed, and there were no cars, but I wasn't deterred. I unloaded my stuff, and I stood outside the campaign office, looked around, and everything looked so peaceful and beautiful, and I was just so excited to start my future. So I took a deep breath, opened the door, and walked into the campaign office, where I found just my boss, sitting there in this big office, about the size of this room, by herself. But she was excited to see me. She couldn't believe that I had made this trek out to Tyson's Corner on this snowy day. And I wasn't deterred. I was like, "I got this." We laughed about the wimpiness of the federal government having the nerve to send their people home while we were taking it all in. And she showed me around this office, which was going to be my home for the next 12 months. I was prepared to spend 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for the next 11 months in this place. She gave me a stack of binders at a table, and that's when I heard it. And I thought, "What is that?" I look around, I don't see anything, and I think, well, it must be from one of the stores next door or the wind. A few seconds pass, and then it's more urgent. That's when I noticed the mirror on the wall. You know, one of those two-way mirrors that they use in a store, security uses to overlook? So my boss, she excuses herself, and she goes into the room. I have no idea how long she was in there. But when she came out, her face was red and splotchy and her hands were shaking. She came up to me and stood on the other side of the table. She wouldn't look at me and she said, "I'm really sorry." And I was just like, okay, what is she sorry about? She's like, I don't know what to say, but it's not going to work out. And I was like, what's not going to work out? Like, what are you talking about? And she said, "The candidate says a black woman can't do this job." She went on talking, and I honestly have no idea what she said because her lips were moving, but all I heard was a loud beeping in my ear, like, "Bee!" And going through my head was, oh, snap, I just gave up my rent-controlled apartment for this. And then it was sort of like anger, like, this isn't, you can't do this, this is illegal. And then it was like, oh, snap, what am I going to do? Followed by sort of like, shit, like, excuse, who can I complain to about this? Like, who do I go to? This isn't fair, but this is a U.S. senator. He has all the power, and I'm just starting out my career. He has, like, control over the Democratic Party, and nobody knows my name. And there are only three people who know this conversation happened. And as I'm looking at my boss and feeling completely powerless, I can see that she's having the same thoughts, and we end up in the same place that... here's this badass campaign manager, but at this moment, she's completely powerless too. And both of us, I'm undervalued because he has no idea what I can do, but has formed, speculated what's possible. And he's undermined her credibility and her experience and as well. So we're standing across this table looking at each other, dealing with this really hard situation, and here's this powerful man who's hiding behind a two-way mirror. So I put my coat on, I packed my stuff up, and I went outside to call a taxi from the payphone outside because I refused to let them see my tears. I refused to let this man break me. And I waited outside in the cold and the snow and vowed that I was not gonna stay powerless. Got in the taxi, and thankfully, this taxi driver knew his way around Northern Virginia, so it was only a $10 cab ride back to the metro. $500 left in my pocket. But I had my dignity intact. So, let's see. That senator went on to win re-election, but it was his last time winning re-election because 6 years later, oddly, women and black women in particular abandoned him, and he lost. It took me a while to find a job, but while I was looking, I stumbled on this organization called the Women's Campaign Fund, which at the time was the oldest and largest pro-choice PAC. And what did they do? They trained women to run for public office. So I volunteered there and got really involved. I became a trainer after I got a job at one of the most powerful unions in the country. Imagine my delight when one day they decided they were going to picket that very same senator outside his office. I don't think none of the members or the staff realized that they were like, it was vindication for me. And when he walked by, I was like, yeah, he deserved this. Later on, I left that union to go and run the Women's Campaign Fund, and where I've, you know, had the privilege of really of training a whole generation of new leaders and being part of the Year of the Woman, of seeing women run for governor and women run for Senate. That spurned the creation of the White House Project, which was to put a woman in the White House, and we will get there soon. And the most importantly, it launched this passion in me that was about electing leaders that really represented the little people, that nobody should feel powerless like I felt powerless. And there should be no leader who would strip an individual of their power, their dignity, their ability to make a living. And that has been my gift. So I reclaimed my power by living my dream, by building new leaders. And 20 years later, I find myself in Maryland, and who do I run into but that campaign manager? And she is a complete and total badass. She reclaimed her power. She's now one of the most sought-after consultants in the country. She has the power to choose who she works for, and she only works for women candidates. So, thank you.